the posture of samasthiti. So we analyze that. It's just like an elevator or going upstairs. So if you stop on the first floor, that is like hatha yoga. And so basically that is gymnastics or bodily exercises for cultivating the sometimes people are practicing hatha yoga for health, sometimes for beauty, for other areas also. And we go another stage, another step, and we stop there, and that is like karma yoga. So people are interested in the fruitive activities, the laws that govern the planet in terms of karma, punya, etc. If we go a little higher, then it is like Ashtanga yoga. So there's so many categories in that, so many yogas in that category. Indigo yoga, Kundalini yoga, so many different things. And then we go a little more, there is jhana. And then we go on to bhakti. But we see that bhakti really, serious bhakti, mature bhakti, has to include some understanding of the body, some proper care of the body. It has to include some basic understanding of karmic principles, how those laws interact. It definitely has to include some understanding of the subtle schemes of things. It definitely must involve knowledge, but not just jnana, but vijnana. And then we see, because of those things, understandings, then one is able to dedicate themselves with great attention. And without such, then the bhakti will not be so sound. So, when Krishna says how of all yogis, he who is engaged in meditation on me, absorbed in me, bhakya mama bijanati, only by this devotional service, can I really be fully understood. And so we can understand Krishna's shakti in different ways, but not really the shakti mam, unless we are coming as he has described or as he has given. And then so much understanding and perception is available. Often people, they engage in some practice of yoga, some austerities, but then right after, they practically destroy all the benefits. It's like this morning we went on a japa walk. Wonderful area here to walk around, a little forest. So someone passed by us who was jogging. So many people, they get up early in the morning, they do their exercises, they do their jogging. But then a little later they come home, they take some coffee, take some tea, smoke some cigarette. So here in one sense they're trying to build the body up, but then at the same time they're destroying it. And of course eating abominable things. So it's almost a contradiction. But we appreciate the idea of taking care of the body because it belongs to Krishna. So we take care of it according to how the owner would be satisfied. And sometimes devotees may find ways how to preach to people based on some of the specific interests that people are having. Just as at the retreat, someone was teaching a course in Dole, I think on yoga. Is that right? One of the seminars was on yoga. And so, sometimes people will come to Krishna consciousness based on these particular interests. We analyze how Prabhupada, when he started the movement in the early 60s, or revitalized Krishna consciousness, it doesn't start, Krishna consciousness is older than time. But as he began to spread this message in such a global way, it came to America. So he also kind of tuned in to a certain class of people. If we look at his writings and his initial presentation, Prabhupada really was trying to tune mainly to the intellectual class, etc. He wanted to create a head, create Brahmins, so society could have a proper head, and people could understand what is what. But during that time, there was such an alternative group of people who were seekers and who were more favorable toward the message. And those were mainly the hippie class of people in America. If we look at some of Prabhupada's conversations and writings, he was not really so impressed with the hippie class. Sometimes he would explain how the mode of passion, mode of ignorance. But particularly at that time, these were many people who were questioning things and were ready to make that bold endeavor in leading an alternative lifestyle. And so that was wonderful in the sense that people were ready to embrace the philosophy and the movement, to dedicate themselves like anything in trying to spread the mission. But it also had some shortcomings. Some of the shortcomings is that for many, many years, that kind of prevalent mentality existed in the society. Basically, the mindset of the American hippie was very much anti-authority, anti-bureaucracy, anti-orthodox society, and massive freedom of expression. And so, sometimes in the process, in maintaining some of that sort of mentality, sometimes things would be done not systematically, not sufficiently organized, not particularly looking at the implications, ramifications of some of the activities, but more in a free spirit mood. So, of course, liberated souls are also free, but not free like animal life. Animal life is also somewhat free, but based on different variegated type of enjoyment. And so that mentality somewhat prevailed, and so many times devotees were not always acting as proper good citizens. Prabhupada wanted devotees to be gentlemen, gentlewomen, respectful. So some of the mentality was, we are devotees, so we can do whatever we want. After all, everyone else is just karmis, and Yamaraj is going to deal with them anyway. And so, if we have to deal with them a little bit now, that's okay, because Yamaraj is going to do the rest. So the mentality was a little bit immature, and in some ways, not so much planning out about the future. As people were young and so eager, just as some of you, 21, 22, some of us were then 19, 18, some people even joined at 16 years old. So the last thing they were thinking about is sort of stability. Thinking more about just excited about traveling all around the world, visiting so many places, doing so many things, and living out of vans, and that was wonderful. And very beautiful for a 20-year-old girl or boy. But then those 19, 20-year-old kids then in many cases became 30, became 40. Some became grandmothers, grandfathers. Things began to change a little bit. Body, the mind, the understanding. And it's also to be understood. It's like things that one does at 5 years old, at 10 years old. Someone does something at 5 or 6, and we say, oh, that's cute. They do the same thing at 25, and we say, the rascal. Immature. So, some things can be understood as they happened when our movement was 5 years and 10 years old. But now, 30 years, we expect a certain level of maturity. Dai Jagannath Subhadra Ki Gori Dai Ki. So, some things change just due to natural maturation, understanding, unfoldment, and normally, hopefully, wisdom comes with age. So, it's not that everything in the movement is to change overnight or is necessary to change. We're saying some secondary things, of course, are to be adjusted. Just as now, there's so much more competition for involving people in a spiritual lifestyle than there was in the 60s. Now there's so many other spiritual organizations, so many other alternative groups, And many times people will say, oh, why should I join the Krishna people? They're too strict. There's other society. They do like this. And so there's so much shoppiness there, so many markets, etc. So it sometimes becomes a little more intense in trying to recruit people when there's so many other areas that they may get attracted to, etc. And so the message has to be strong and the packaging, of course, attractive. And much of, we see, Lord Chaitanya's mission was literally trying to intensely see how to connect with the conditioned souls based on their different forms of craziness or different types of attachments. We see specifically how Bhakti Vinod, he was one of the foremost in doing this. Bhakti Vinod even changed his name in some of his writings. The Sahajya class was so many different branches of Sahajyas. So one of the things he did was that he infiltrated. And he wrote many things using Sahajya terminology. Even used a Sahajya pen name. And so he was accepted by some of those circles. As he entered into that environment, then he began to set things straight. He began to explain things in such ways. So there are other examples of this, but Bhakti Vinod was very foremost. Or we see how he even spoke and used Shakespeare. He knew Bible, he knew Quran, Torah, etc. And he used this as a way to preach and to help souls. We see how Prabhupada quoted Chanaka Pandit. And who was Chanaka Pandit? Sometimes Prabhupada was asked. He was a conditioned soul. He was not a pure devotee. He was not a liberated being. But just a wise Brahmana, very wise. So he would use him. Sometimes Prabhupada quoted from the Aquarian Gospel, etc. Now, there are some delicate things there. He did not quote from these things as Shastra, but he used it just as he gave analogies sometimes. So he gave analogies to explain something, to explain something that we understand, help us to understand something that we're not familiar with. Sometimes analogy is done like that. Analogy to acquaint a person with something that they're knowledgeable of, to extend it to something that they're not so aware of. So this also shows there is a great flexibility in preaching, and this is the duty of the acharya, acharya purusham veda, purusho veda, but at the same time, it can be dangerous. Just like we had, historically speaking, in our society, we had an example was New Vrindavan, one of the projects I'm presently acting as GVC of, with Ravana Swami. And so there was a period in New Vrindavan where there was a desire to do outreach and to expand the preaching, to make more devotees and to bring more people to Krishna consciousness. And so there was so many different interfaith conferences, workshops, seminars, so much exchange with all different types of groups. But what began to happen is because of a lack of chastity, what began to happen is that the devotees started becoming more like the people they were preaching to. And even sometimes there would be these big conferences, and there would be Native American Indians, and there would be Buddhists, and there would be lamas, and there would be all different types of people, Christians and Muslims and monks. But even though it was on Hare Krishna property, it was almost hard to find Vaishnava discussion. Discussions were so much other things. At the same time, it was a Vaishnava center, temple, but it became a little difficult to hear ongoing Vaishnava discourse. And then at some point, devotees, and while during the japa period, instead of doing japa, they were doing Kundalini yoga, they were doing Hatha yoga. And then after a while, they are chanting Jesus hymns instead of, the mantras, so many things. And so it became quite a farce. And so that it is very dangerous. But at the same time, we do see in our line that such clever planning is executed as a way to bring people to Krishna consciousness. And we see that in the line of Acharyas making various types of arrangements. In general, it is always best to be conservative, not fundamental but conservative. Because to engage in pioneering, one can begin to speculate, interpolate, and if one does not have the vision or the potency, they'll simply create a farce. Just as we've seen all over the world, you've seen some cases here, if you open your eyes, you'll see that there's some people who are very intelligent, materially, who are very skilled in different ways, but they start getting into things, and that becomes their budget, rather than the alignment to Vaishnava Siddhanta. And that is dangerous. It happens sometimes when devotees, you know, go to the universities. Not that going to university is something bad. It's a matter of how it's used. It's a matter of the person's mentality. For some devotees, going to university, they find some ways to use it. But in general, in most cases, one gets very contaminated by the association you have and the way you begin to think, the way you begin to analyze and process things. And because these are also such factories of massive sense gratification, and because many times one doesn't have so much association, then contamination sets in. But at the same time, if such can be used for preaching, then how powerful that it can actually be. As in war, there's a need for many different types of weapons. And in a well-organized society, spiritual society, people are encouraged based on their propensities. So if somebody has a certain propensity, the more they can be also encouraged on that, the more they can use that, the more value they can add to the preaching, to society, and the more in conscious raising. Somebody has basically brahminical tendencies, but they have to be involved in Vaishya activities all the time, then they may do that. But they will not do it with such a zeal. They will not really give themselves fully. Plus, surrender literally means also we're giving back. We're not identifying. We're making it available in Krishna's service. So if Krishna's given us certain types of propensities, if we're not using those, then we're going to find that we're going to feel some depression, some anxiety, and some disturbance. Ultimately, we want to be able to do whatever is the need. But that is a very advanced level. We try to work toward that. It is the devotee's duty to try to do whatever is needed. It's the leader's duty to try to engage everybody as best as possible based on their tendencies and propensities. Devotee is to be ready to whatever is there is in Krishna's service. But it's the leader's duty to try to study a little close, be more personal with the devotees, and take care of their creepers, their concerns, and try to see as best as possible how to encourage the devotees so that they're able to give the most because of their particular abilities. So it is not an unnecessary imposition or strain, etc. As we look and we analyze that there are some people who respond and say yes to Krishna consciousness based on, you know, the Harinam, some through the book. Some people, they will read a book, but they will not even accept it on the streets, but they'll get it from the bookstore. Some people, they will take the Krishna consciousness, they'll take prasadam, they won't take a free meal, but they'll buy it from the restaurant. Maybe the same food, same items. But this is the way that they will make their connection. Some people will come, of course, directly to the temple. And in other cases, we have to find ways to go out and to be able to meet them. Some years back, I had been doing a lot of preaching in some of the third world countries. And then I was visiting, because I'm born in America, but I was out of America for so much of my devotional career. A lot of my devotional career, I was in the Eastern Europe countries and doing library party work and visiting even here, countries like here. Most of the books in the libraries at universities, my party, or put those books, Prabhupada's Bhagavatam sets, Chaitanya Charitamritas, and met with the scholars of comparative religion, of Indology, Sanskrit, etc. And so we were doing that all around the world, selling the sets, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavatam says. And then later I started doing some specific work in Africa. And so sometimes I would have chance once a year to come back to visit America. And at that time, it was beginning to be noticed that things were gradually kind of going down some. Some temples were getting scarce. And we were gradually making devotees, but in general, the same type of devotee. More the devotee in the mode of, someone who's looking for relief. In other words, someone who's not necessarily looking for money, but in distress. So we're getting a lot of people like that, in some cases. And it just dawned on me how we are often still preaching as if we're still in the 60s. People have changed, the world has changed, and we have also changed. And so sometimes, as we are analyzing the field of activity, then we know how to function based on proper analyzation of the activity, the field of activity. So I was working in the Washington area for a while, and I had some interesting ideas about so many other class of people that are not being reached. Professional class, intellectual class, so many things. So we started an institute. The institute basically is, I was talking to Sri Satchinanda about the program that he's doing and some similarities. Sometimes there's a need for a certain specialized programs to be able to extend, to reach in different ways. Or just like some devotees who go to university may do very good by such, but not that there should be everyone does those sort of things. And it just becomes improper and it'll be a spaced out situation. Just like it's not necessary for everyone to engage in communication or public relations. Some devotees may have that sort of inspiration, that insight, may have that kind of background from the past, and they can do so much to be able to serve the temples by that effort. So what I begin to notice is that so much of Prabhupada's desire was to try to reach all classes of people. This is Lord Chaitanya's desire. And especially to influence people in power, to especially influence leadership, especially to influence the scholars. And so often to influence such people, they must see that Krishna consciousness is relevant. Or they'll just take it as an interesting religion. Some things that people do, they'll look at it sociologically, historically, etc. Just as in any exchange, if there's not healthy communication, then people will not take it to heart. So at some point, we created this institution, which is about 95% professionals. For instance, somebody joins our movement now, they're 45, 50 years old. What do we do? Do we tell them to move into the temple? They have 3 children. They have 1 or 2 houses, or they're living in a flat. They have a job. The wife has a job. Do we tell them, sell your house, give your children to your the grandparents, come and live in the temple, shave up, and come and go on Harinam with us? It's not quite so practical. Then we tell them to give that up, then we send them out to try to collect, and try to preach, etc. So such person first may find it difficult living in a communal environment. Also, such person may, in some cases, may already have some connection with mature energy. And therefore, if they can be able to preach from those connections, then they can often reach people that we may not be able to reach as we're living in the ashrams, etc. So we start training up the devotees, these professional people, how to preach based on their professions. Some cases it's very easy. Somebody's a psychiatrist, somebody's a psychotherapist. So they're already having clients, they're already in the mood of like guru, they're speaking to people, they're in the mood of giving guidance. So in some cases, it's very easy. So the idea is now, you just bring Krishna, and you find ways to help them based on helping them to deal with their problems from a Krishna conscious perspective. Someone is a lawyer, someone is a doctor. So then with our doctors, I have many people in my zone, and also many disciples, who are either allopathic doctors or an alternative medicine. So sometimes we encourage them to come together, work together, start clinics, start workshops, seminars, or go to conferences and things where people are discussing basic medicine and bring in the Krishna factor. Then what happens is that such people begin to make devotees out of these communities. Because when someone gets ready to join a society, one of the things that they are looking for, they're looking for themselves. Look to see, is there someone in that organization that I can identify with? Or if I join this, what will I do? And so as a CEO, yes. So doctor, lawyer, they see, oh yes, so many other people also have joined and they're doing like this. They have their families and they're doing dealing with Krishna consciousness. Then they step forward a lot faster because they see the relevancy in such ways. So we organize in such a way that at any given day we have so many things happening all around the city. And so we have some devotees, some who are teachers who teach Hatha Yoga. So we have place for that. We have some devotees, men as well as women, who are professionals but are also into martial arts. Then we have a martial arts institute. We have several devotees who have black belts, women as well as men. And so people come. They come to the dojo. They have the Sringadev deities there. And so, and so one or two days, they are learning the physical martial arts. And two or three days, they're hearing Krishna consciousness philosophy. Because actually martial arts is really started by monks. It has a spiritual connection. And of course, Kshatriyas in the Vedic time were very expert in some of these arts. And so, one thing after another was a way to bring people. There's many people come, then they hear something about Krishna. And the power in that is that we're not just Krishna devotees in the sense that we're not just some isolated religion, but we're really the people who have a spiritual transcendental vision on everything. If we really take the philosophy to its utmost, then what happens is that we realize that this is not just some conceptualization, but this is the spiritual understanding about all things. That means that right now, if our movement is a little more intense and successful, we should be the people who are leading the ecology movement. We should be the people leading the nutrition movement. We should be the people leading the Greenpeace movement. We should be the people who are helping people to understand the dangers of abortion. Because all of these issues people are so concerned with, there's a spiritual reason or spiritual connection behind it to understand it in the proper way. And if we do that, then we'd be the Brahmins, or we'd be as Prabhupada would desire, or as Lord Chaitanya, that we begin to re-spiritualize all aspects of society based on people's interests, their concerns, and their propensities. So when people want to know about Vaishnav teachings, there should be a devotee who is at the university or professor teaching such, explaining such. People want to know about better ways of how to parent, then there should be Vaishnavas who are leading this. If, in fact, we're really imbibing the philosophy, then we have so many additional variables of how to deal with all different types of problems. I have TV. I'm on TV in America. I have my own television show 3 times a week in Washington, Maryland, Virginia. 1 time a week I'm in Detroit. And now I'll be 1 time a week in Philadelphia. And so what we do with these shows is that we emphasize how to solve material problems with spiritual solutions. And based on that, then so many, many people respond very favorably to Krishna consciousness. For the last 6 years or so, some of the projects I've been in have made, you know, more devotees than any other time, or any other leader in America. But mainly it has to do with this sort of outreach, trying to understand what people are interested in and not becoming unchaste. Because we become unchaste, then what is the value? And trying to preach, we lose ourselves, then we just become an embarrassment. But out of compassion, it is one's desire or one's duty sometimes to find ways how to live the philosophy and how to be able to share it in such ways. In our farm community, like in Giranagari, some devotees ask about this, so I'm speaking about some of these things now. So we have these retreats, and sometimes, I said last night, sometimes we have a retreat all for devotees, sometimes for devotees and karmis, sometimes it's for the karmis. So some people may come for 3 or 4 days. And so we have this, you know, nice land, 400 acres of land. And then we have some devotees who are teaching hatha yoga, some devotees are doing massage, some devotees are in acupuncture, some devotees are in acupressure. We have also some devotees there who are allopathic doctors. And so by the time a person is going from one devotee to the next, and by the time they finish 3 or 4 days during the week or for a week, they've made a major transformation. So we have people come from the government and educators, etc. And they come, and by the time they've left, they've gotten so much Krishna consciousness because the devotee is rendering the service and preaching. And of course, these are mostly householders. It's not always such a service for brahmachari. But as a householder, rendering such service, preaching, and making some finance at the same time for one's musigrahasta life. And also being able to work along with other devotees as devotees are coming together to do these services. And so they're able to control or keep a certain type of environment as they are spiritualists, etc. Anyway, these are just so many different things that can be done if devotees are looking at the field of activity and trying to see how to reach out. If we have some talents or have some abilities, then if somehow we can be able to use that in Krishna's service, then this will be very, very powerful. The devotee will feel more inspired. As we were discussing the other day, Bhaktivinoda explains that for healthy development, for the individual as well as the community, and he explained in the Shikshamrita that one must give good care of the body, unless the person is a Paramahamsa, these things must be done. One must also have a mind satisfied. So if we are doing so many services and the mind is not satisfied, then after a while we'll lose interest, we'll become bored, we'll become dry. There must also be a sense of social, healthy social well-being, and we must, of course, base everything on the Shastra. So when those things are in place, then we find that there's great excitement. Now, one or two other short points. The New Age community and the esoteric community, they can often be some of our greatest friends, but they also can be some of our greatest enemies. Now, why is that? Because their basic philosophies is God is impersonal. Their basic philosophy is that there's no need for material authority. They're ready to honor non-manifested authority, but not a personalized authority. They're ready to accept angels. They're ready to accept channelers. They're ready to accept mediums. But they're not ready to accept personal authority. So this way, it's kind of a cheating propensity because it means that you can interpret things as you like, you can accept and reject when you want, because after all, it is not a personalized connection. What to say of the cheating aspect of not wanting to recognize that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Often they can also be very dangerous because many times the general focus ends in actually sense gratification, particularly a lot of illicit activities. So much illicit activities go on in these types of groups because what happens is that mode of goodness boy looking for mode of goodness girl, and you find that this sort of exchange is constantly going on. People are interacting with other people's wives, other people's girlfriends. More than not, this goes on. Because as you begin to become also more spiritual, you often become more attractive to the opposite sex. And one is not understanding and keeping boundary then the tendency is there will be some illicit affairs. It's like sometimes my work, I preach at monasteries. So recently I was preaching at a monastery, a Trappist monastery, for some nuns and some monks. And so I was emphasizing to them one of the reasons why they're having so much trouble in maintaining celibacy. So one of the things I brought up is that one who is celibate and not keeping psychological space, or one who takes the responsibility for their work, just like if you're counseling someone, you're directing, this is also for our own benefit, if you're guiding somebody, you're counseling someone, and if you are claiming the benefits for how you're helping them, then what happens after a while, you start also feeling that you have the right for the work you're doing, you have the right to experience. And so this happens a lot with lawyers, with therapists, and also with spiritualists, those who are involved in pastoral care. That if you are speaking to someone, guiding them, helping them, then a natural relationship develops. The natural pulls begin to happen. Because you're helping somebody, they feel glad, they feel attached to you because of the help. And often they make themselves sort of available, or they open themselves up, and they can be abused or misused. In that sense, just like a child is making themselves available to the parent for guidance, etc. So when one is in such a position, then it is particularly up to the leader or the person who is doing the guiding, is more, the responsibility is more on them to keep boundaries. Because it's natural, you're helping someone, they are feeling some gratitude, and the relationship, a connection, see, develops. So many times these nuns and priests, they were having so much trouble because they're constantly counseling people, but as they were counseling, they were feeling responsible for the success. Or they were feeling very much that they themselves were wonderful for how someone is coming back and back to them and telling them, well, how much you helped me, only you can help me. And then the next thing, relationship begins to take place. So many times we have this in our own society, that people are coming and they're being helped by the temple president, by the temple coordinator, by the regional secretary, by the renunciate, and the relationship begins to develop subtly, so to speak. And if there is one is not having more genuine compassion, then one will feel that they should own that connection. They should experience that, and then gradually it grades into something else. So even in those areas of celibacy, devotees should be foremost in being able to help others to understand such. If we are leading, studying the philosophy properly, just as Prabhupada explained how if there was a devotee who becomes a president, say tomorrow, a devotee becomes head of the Swiss government, what would that devotee do? Would the devotee demand for everybody to become a Hare Krishna? Would the devotee make laws that everybody must follow the Hare Krishna teachings? No. But the devotee's duty, Prabhupada explains, would be to see that everyone is being genuine to their religion. And where someone has the ability, the interest, to take to Krishna consciousness, then of course we make it fully available, encourage them, and guide them based on it. So that means our duty is for ourselves to be very Krishna conscious, and to constantly see how we can get other people to be Krishna conscious, but also to plant seeds and to raise general consciousness on the planet. So it's a very powerful task that really has been given to us. But somehow we have a tendency to think small. We act small, we produce small results. We have a tendency sometimes to change things that we should never change, and things we should change, we are afraid to. That has sometimes been a problem. Some things we should never change, we may sometimes alter and play with, and things that may be a need to make adjustments, that often there's fear or there's lack of vision, and so it doesn't happen. But we analyze that this is a movement for re-spiritualizing society. It's a cultural movement, so it means spreading Krishna consciousness and all different areas. So we'll stop there. This verse is really about yoga, and yoga is often, and one involves him or herself in it for different reasons, and we see that in many of the esoteric communities, yoga is there, and many people have even come to Krishna consciousness due to their interest in some of these areas. They begin to understand that there's something higher than just the Hatha yoga or the Ashtanga yoga, that it all ends in ultimate devotion to Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can try to help people to see the conclusion. It's like I do some preaching to ministers, to imams, and also to rabbis. So one of the ways I preach to rabbis and some ministers is that as we have in some little understanding of their theology, confidential aspect, we show them that really to dive deeper into your own tradition, that this is what Krishna consciousness is. Because if we analyze some of the most deepest aspects of Christianity, of Islam, of Judaism, that it really becomes more and more similar to Krishna consciousness. Just like some years ago, I took a group of devotees to Egypt and to Israel. Sometimes when I do these namahatas in different countries, different places, I may take 20 devotees, 10 devotees. Devotees are sort of trained for some of these kind of experiences. So once I took a group of devotees to Israel to visit, you know, some of the communities there, especially to deal with some of the, to meet with some of the rabbis who were involved in mystical Judaism. So the inner teachings, or the mystical teachings of Judaism, emphasizes chanting the names of God, reincarnation, etc. Although these things are not taught in general, you know, to the general, see, masses. And so, as I had some insight on those things, and I was speaking to some of their scholars, I'm not a scholar myself, you can see that, but some little interest. And so, they were fascinated, because they were able to realize that so much of what we understand in the Kabbalah, so much we understand in the most intimate parts of our theology, is what you people are understanding and having in your scriptures. And so we help them to appreciate that you do not necessarily have to renounce your position, your philosophy, but this will help you to go deeper into your theology. I learned that a little bit because when I first started doing this sort of work, we would sometimes have Christian ministers who would get so excited in Krishna consciousness, then they would start preaching Krishna consciousness to the congregation, and then all of a sudden they get sacked. Because their authorities start hearing about it. And then here you have somebody who's 55 years old, who's living in a house given to them by the church. Their whole life has been based for 30, 40 years on their church, and now they're thrown out and they have no place. What do you do? Do you have the ability? Do we have the money to take care of them? Not so much. So I started doing something different. I started giving the ministers Prabhupada's books, tapes, being in contact with them, and having them to create amongst themselves a Krishna conscious study group with some of their more intimate people. And then what they would do is that the minister himself would share Krishna consciousness to the whole congregation, but in the terminology that the people could respond to. And so by doing such, then the minister would be raising their level, at the same time being able to keep his job, his source of finances, etc. And even more dangerous with Muslims, because if a very high place Elijah converts to something else, his life is at risk. He can be killed. And so we had some cases like in Africa where we would have these interfaith gatherings. And what we would do is we would have an interfaith gathering of people of all different religious traditions. And we would have a certain topic. Say a topic may be to give your theology on the nature of the soul, the nature of God. So inevitably what would happen is that people would constantly see that the Hare Krishnas, they have much more understanding, much more information on the subject matter. So then sometimes the leaders of other societies, they would start reading our books, they start coming visiting us because they were amazed at the quality of information. And in some cases, they would want to join, or they would we renounce their position as a lady, and then it'd be very dangerous. And so we start doing similar. That if they were going to remain in that country or remain in that city to study the books, and then churches and big mosques with millions of people sometimes, or tens of thousands of people. When we had an issue we had to deal with, then all we had to do was call the leaders of other societies and get them to help us, to assist us, and so many wonderful things would happen. And in many cases, our devotees would be the chairman of the interfaith groups. And so we had some land problem, like you're in France, so we have some problem with the government. So what we'd have done in a situation like that is get the leaders of other groups to hear our problem, and then get them, go to local government, petition on our behalf. And then even though we are a minority, or some people may see us as a little bit hard fashion, even as a cult, then these orthodox situations come forward and people begin to listen a little more. So as we are trying to survive and trying to progress, then some devotees may find some ways how to analyze various fields of activity to be able to get more preaching happening. Or just like Gaurlila, so he's doing this project, this rock project, and so hopefully it'll be successful and it will reach some people. But we just have to be careful that while we're doing these things, that we don't become like that, or that we don't lose our focus, because the tendency is that that happens too much. Is that the devotee goes off and does this thing, and then later you have less and less Krishna consciousness, and so then you wonder, well, what's the success? If trying to make devotees, trying to give Krishna consciousness, we lose our Krishna consciousness. But pioneering is always there in the Vaishnava line. Whether we're pioneering, that we're going out in many, many places through the vans to preach, and we find so many environments where people are, whether it's in the malls, in the concert, whether it's downtown, house to house. So we find ways. The Sankirtan leaders have been constantly agitating their minds and finding new fields, new avenues. So in other areas, preachers may do something similar to see how to expand the movement. But always checking in, sort of an inventory, to make sure that we are being chased to our Siddhanta, and that our Krishna consciousness is growing as we're trying to share it. Any questions, any comments? Anyone have? Yes?
I was studying at university, and I was studying medicine. And I was speaking to one of my colleagues, and he was asking me that, you know, what's the Krishna conscious Hindu? What's the Krishna conscious view on medicine? I mean, all the information, so much of the drugs they have, all the information they have is based on testing on animals. So he's saying, you know, well, we've got the information now, would you still study that if you're in that stuff? I answered him by saying that you should stay there and finish it off, and then you can use the information for Krishna. But at the same time, I was thinking to myself, well, they have. They've got all this from sinful means, and they're continuing it. And so if you conform to that and you use that, then you're going to get some of the karma for that, even though it's being used for Krishna money. It's like, you know, something you're doing, it's just simple, but using it, you know, kind of you the Vairagya, trying to do it like that.
And that's why even among some of the secular people who work in the fields of medicine, in Europe as well as America, many of them, although they have their degrees in allopathic medicine, are beginning to pursue alternative medicine also, because they see so many of the downsides, you know, of allopathic medicine. I was at a conference some months ago, a yearly conference of National American Medical Association. I had a chance to give a major speech at that yearly convention. So it's a convention of doctors from America and from Canada. And I was quite amazed to see the number of allopathic doctors who now are meditating, who are vegetarians, who understand the importance of acupuncture, acupressure, and are pursuing non-Western things. NIH, National Institute of Medical National Institute for Health, the big organization in America that monitors medicine, the last few years they have created a special department for alternative care, because in the last year or two people spent almost as much as they do, you know, for regular care. So they're beginning interested mainly because of the monetary consideration. But many, many people now are looking at these things because they just want to be helped. You know, the body gets ill, they want to know what can work. And in some countries, regular medicine is becoming so expensive, so people are looking for alternatives also. Other questions? Yes?
You talked about the 60s of preaching was and some other fields, and we are now, we are not catched up with a new mood here also in Switzerland, and we think we are stuck in the same house, and we don't have any income and so on. So, what would be the solution?
We're talking about that earlier, that it has to be a organic concern from the devotees and the community itself. That they have to look at the present, reflect on the past, and most important, focus on the future to see what is going to be best for the greatest care of the greatest number of devotees, what is going to be best for encouraging the congregation and spreading Krishna consciousness. And so if the decision is that there are ways how they can raise additional funds without killing the spirit of everyone, then that may be the decision that people may accept. Or if looking at it close, it seems that it is going to literally to be extreme over-endeavor, and that in trying to keep the physical facility, that so much is going to put devotees in so much anxiety, and it'll be impractical, and everything is just going to be money conscious, then of course this wouldn't be a healthy consideration to keep the building. Best if we are able to do that, we're able to keep the building and raise the funds and everyone's devotional keeper flourishing. But that may not be so easy. And it has a lot, I think it will have a lot to do with the response of the congregation, how much they're really able to step forward. And maybe if the Indian community also can step forward a little more. And perhaps as they are clearer and clearer that if they are not able to come to the call, then we may not have this facility in this area, then some change. But while we're looking at all of those things, we also have to look more at the spiritual factor. As we intensify the spirituality, we intensify our ability to communicate better with each other and work together, then often Krishna does some most amazing things begin to be clarified and something happens. And just by increasing purity, maybe get something so unusual, make it one person or one, two people who step up and decide just to pay off for the whole building, have to arrange some type of endowment where some funds are available for the deity service and other things for the maintenance. I mean, many things happen. The most powerful things that happen in our movement have happened based on steady sincerity, and then Krishna accommodates in so many ways. So the devotees, the leaders need to, and will be, I'm sure, discussing these things more. And it's important that what the consensus is, that somehow everyone tries to, you know, to back that up. And if somehow it's not also not working, then we should be honest about that as well. If the consensus ultimately is that you should try to keep it, and then there's so many plans in trying to do it, and then after it goes on somewhat for half a year, and it just becomes obvious that it's not so practical, then a shift should be made. Or if the consideration is that some change should be made now, then it should be looked at in a very conscientious way, and then acted upon. Any last question? But it is a fact, though, that things have changed. People have changed. And our philosophy is eternal. But we are dealing with the fields of activities. And so it is our duty to be a little more sensitive to what the field is and what the needs, also the needs of the Vaishnavas. When someone is 19, their needs are a little different than when they are 45 years old and they're married and they have children. And it also becomes our duty not to agitate a newcomer's mind, but there should be some plans considering this person is brahmachari now, but in 15 years from now or 10 years from now they want to marry. There should be some way to have a healthy transition. And one of the best ways, again, is having the congregation more active, so that when someone does want to change their lifestyle, and if there's a strong congregation, the person can be given some employment, the person can be brought on, helped by his congregation in some way. This is happening in some of the projects like this. Any last thing? John.
Also, I think also many times the culture was very big. They had theater and social gatherings and so on. And here our culture is more westernized. We don't have any Vedic or Vaishnava culture. So, especially as Grihasthas, they get sometimes into problem. You know, there's no cultural thing as Brahmacharya in the temple, which I'm not Krishna.
It's a very interesting question. This is one of the reasons why Gopal Bhatta, for instance, he has given us samskaras according to our Vaishnava Siddhanta. And what we see is that there are ways of how there can be strong socialization and a sense of community without deviating. And so when we have strong samskaras, then there is this constant grouping and bonding. So when there is the baby is born, the first grain, first hair cutting, first day going to school, when there is wedding, when there is initiate so many different things. So this helps to bring a community together. And also, there's things that we can do as a way that we honor each other without bringing things to a point where there may be illicit affairs or promiscuous activities. See, much of material socialization turns into illicit sex and intoxication. We listen to too much of this rock music, these parties that's going on. As this goes on in some circles, you're going to start finding there's going to be problems. There's going to be problems in promiscuity. Or as people are going to the movies and the cinemas, and they're getting their minds so much absorbed in hearing and seeing illicit things, then after a while, they start feeling the desires for illicit things. So we need to then have what? Have more drama, have more videos, have more things that we can be able to be entertained with that are spiritual. And there's nothing Maya about a group of devotees doing some things together that is not bringing in sense gratification. Devotees want to go for a picnic, or devotees are going to go I've seen some cases, some projects, where devotees may even rent a skating rink or a swimming area, and they all go there together. But the difference is that they're going, they read some shastra, they do some skating, do some swimming, they take prasadam, and so it's on a level where they're associating without jeopardizing their spiritual creepers. We are not just to be so rigid, we become hard-hearted. But we're not also to be so loose where we lose our identity. And because in some cases you were like so rigid here, now it's almost like the other extreme. What if you're so rigid? Shamananda was telling me the other day that even to ride a bicycle, was considered to be Maya at some particular point. And here, just riding a bicycle for health or whatever, it's not Maya. It's not necessarily Maya. It's quite if you're riding a bicycle to go to the pub, that's different. But sometimes we have this kind of mentality where we're thinking that we're just supposed to stay in the temple and chant, and that's it. No. Krishna consciousness should be an enjoyable experience. It should be something that devotees really do, and they are happy about it. And there should be serious, good association in this way. And so, especially amongst householders, it's even more needed. If we're not getting it amongst the devotees, then we will, find it in other means. So this idea of partying and doing disco dancing or something is dangerous, because this is, you know, in spiritual dance, just as we see, say, the Jagannath, we're having now many places, the Jagannath Rath Yatra. So, Jagannath also has special dances. There are Western dancers who are trained only to dance, you know, for Lord Jagannath. And so they're giving special care, special treatment, special mentality, but it's all for the service of the Lord. But these Western dances, it's all, you know, gyrating the body, stimulating the mind and other parts of the body. And so this kind of stimulation, it leads into gross things. But this is very dangerous, actually, what's going on. We realize devotees are looking for, trying to, you know, become more natural, so to speak. Becoming natural doesn't mean to become sense gratifiers, become more animalistic, become, you know, like in the wilderness. But it means to be more genuine about one's Krishna consciousness, and to have more healthy types of relationships. And when we have that, then not only do we encourage each other, but we also become less sexually agitated. We have healthy, loving relationships, and we become less agitated. Sometimes it's happening with our grahastha ashram also. Because people were so rigid with each other, then there's so much bhoga tyaga. So rigid, and thinking that's it is maya to really to be caring. Then what happens is that then there becomes so much meditation on the physicality. When there is more intimacy and real caring, people do more things together, then there's not a need for so much physicality. In other words, when husband and wife are together and they're not really being friends and not really having great compassion toward each other, but it's just more like business, more like work, then they will find that they're more relating to sex itself. Because then the intimacy is only in the physicality. But when there is more genuine sharing, then there's more fulfillment in many ways in the consciousness, etc. This was Vedic culture. Vedic culture, everything was done as a science. The preparing of the food, the arrangement of the house, everything. And then the bhajans and the kirtan, all of these things were there to stimulate and protect the consciousness. And when these things are not done healthily, then we feel dry, and then there is more desire for the pleasure only coming in one particular way. So when there is, it's like amongst the are renouncing it. The brahmacharis are just doing their work, they're not reading together, they're not discussing things, they're not having healthy brahmachari friendship. It's only a matter of time that emptiness will be so strong that they must have a partner from the opposite sex. If householders are associating, and if they're not really appreciating each other as Vaishnavas, and also caring, having genuine heart-to-heart concerns, then they'll be arguing, or there'll be so much involvement in sex life, or they'll start pursuing another woman or another man. Because the tendency will think, I have the wrong partner, and then they'll be pursuing someone else. And that's happened so much in the movement, you know, already. And it's fragmenting Krishna conscious culture. So we have some boundaries, but love is real. Sometimes we are preaching, there's no love in the material world. Yes, there's not the highest level of pure prema in the material world. But love is always there. It's just a matter of the gradation. So sometimes people are preaching like this, and they use that to justify being impersonal. They use it to justify being harsh, or just working on productivity. And then when you do that, then at some point, one may find that something happens in their life, and they become overwhelmed, because that is the natural tendency with everyone, to love and to be loved, to be cared for. And when it's not there, then there will be so much imbalance in the consciousness, so much artificial activities and repression. When we repress, it'll come out in some way. And how's it coming out? Coming out in incest, coming out in child abuse. If we look at the child abuse in our movement, it's disgusting. The amount of children who have been abused in the history of this movement is very disgusting. Some of that also has to do with improper channeling of energies. It has to do with lack of healthy Vaishnava relationships. And those desires are there, and they get projected or manifested on the children. So we are older movement now, and we have to be more expert in dealing with, you know, with some of these issues. Otherwise, the society crumbles if these things are not addressed in the proper way. ISKCON found the charge of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki.